Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the podcast Historical Inaccuracies. We are four friends. Kelly.
Hello.
Becky.
Hi.
Cam, myself, hello. And our lovely Greek hoplite, unfortunately, is sick today. Get well soon, Maria.
Get well soon, Maria. We love you.
Get well soon.
We're four friends that like to discuss various aspects of history, and today we are doing a very interesting and special episode regarding historical inaccuracies in movies.
Yay!
So, historical fact of the day. I am just double checking that it is indeed... Yes, it is indeed the 3rd of May. Sorry, I had to get my calendar up. So, on the 3rd of May, 1791... Ustawa Rzadowa, which is Polish for the Governance Act, also known as the Constitution of the 3rd of May 1791, is ratified by the Sejm in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth Parliament, or the Parliament of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. Very interesting, this is generally considered to be Europe's first and the world's second modern written national constitution after the Constitution of the United States. It was, in effect, a constitution that would introduce equality between, you know, like kind of regular people, townspeople, nobility, and also placed peasants under the protection of the government, mitigating the worst abuses of serfdom, which is actually quite interesting. Sadly, however, the constitution would be invalid a few years later when that year later, because in 1792 we had the Polish-Russian War of 1792, whereby the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth was shat on from a great height by the Russian Empire, and subsequently you would then have the partition of Poland between Prussia and Russia. So yeah, there you go.
Wow, that's really interesting. Thank you.
I do have more up on that, but when we do our kind of Polish podcast, we can discuss it then. So to kick it off, we are going to start with, I think, probably one of the all-time kind of like historically inaccurate movies, despite the fact that it's an Oscar-winning movie, Braveheart. So essentially, what happens, it's meant to be based upon the life of William Wallace, fighting against the English for the independence of Scotland. So basically, Wallace is a young boy. He's got his wee pal Hamish. They're playing with stones, flinging things at fucking skulls and stuff like that. Wallace's dad go away to battle. You know, Wallace is a peasant in the movie, and actually he was part of the nobility, but, you know, fuck it, whatever. Wallace's dad comes back, and his deeds and his brother's deeds, and then Wallace is in a fucking barn with, like, people hanging, which is a bit fucking weird, but anyway. And then all of a sudden, his uncle comes along, he's like, yeah, don't worry about it, you know, I'll fucking take you and I'll educate you. And Wallace is like, aye, all right, cool, that's Barry, whatever. And then he grows up, he comes back, and then, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm fucking back, I'm here at a party. And then, what is it, he's at a wedding, and then there's a lassie, she's fucking dancing around, and her husband's like, yeah, gonna get jiggy. And the English come along, and they're all like, no, this isn't happening. The English captain's like, you know, I'm gonna pump your missus. And the Scots guy, no, you know, I'm gonna pump her. And then, like, you know, basically, it's just kind of like, right, okay. And then Wallace is standing there going, this is fucking wrong. And then the English captain takes away the lassie. And then it's kind of like, I'm fucking annoyed. And then, oh, my God, I can't believe this. They're pumping our women folk. So then moving on. Before that, there's something to do with stones, and then they're throwing stones, and then, like, fucking Hamish recognises it's Wallace, and he's like, oh, Wallace, how's it going? And Wallace's like, all right, you big ginger fanny, how's it going? So, yeah, they've got that part, and then moving on, Wallace falls in love with this lassie, who's meant to be Scottish, but she's actually a Geordie, but never mind. So they move on, and then she almost gets raped by an English soldier, and Wallace is like, oh, this is fucking bullshit, and kills him and starts killing people. And then she's get killed by an English captain, so the same captain that pumped the guy's missus before, get a whole bunch of guys together, then they burn down the fucking fort, and they kill him. And then eventually it moves on, and there's big battles, And then Wallace is all like, yeah, I'll get my fucking soldiers and that. They've then got a mad Irishman that joins them for some reason, who the actor that plays him is Scottish, which is quite funny. You know, a Scotsman playing an Irishman in a Scottish movie. I mean, whoever fucking thought that? But anyway, so there were all these big battles and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, fucking fight, 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 whatever. And then Wallace gets betrayed by Robert the Bruce. And then he's just, him. And then Wallace pumps the Prince of England's missus. She was about 10 at the time, so, I mean, fuck, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we're talking about artistic license and the rest of it, but whatever. Moving on, Wallace is about to get his head cut off and stuff like that. He's about to get killed, and it's kind of like, you know, treason, you know, he's your king. And Wallace is like, nah, he's not my fucking king. And then he gets his head cut off, and then it's, you know, freedom! And then that's him. I mean, and then at the very end, it's the Battle of Bannockburn, and Robert the Bruce is leading his troops, and they fought like warrior poets, they fought like Scotsmen, and then, thank fuck, that's the end of the movie.
Absolutely the best explanation of any film I have ever heard. Fantastic. Thank you.
Kelly, would you like to take it away, or...?
So, I think the first thing to say about Braveheart is that I do actually, on a whole, like it. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a Scottish person in particular who watches the end scene and doesn't get all, you know, swelling with pride. But obviously there is plenty of aspects of truth that Mr. Gibson, the Australian, sacrificed to make that drama happen. But I think in this episode as well, a lot of you might find me defending certain aspects of these films as well for the inaccuracies that are included, because one of the things I'd done at uni was, I'd done a film course, and one of the things that we had covered was how certain mediums don't work with certain aspects of real life or fictional events. So if you're adapting something that worked well in a book might not work well in a movie, and people have to make those creative choices to make something work. And it's the same with truth. There's some aspects of truth that, I mean, if you're packaging up a movie and trying to sell it to a wider audience, sometimes truth has to be sacrificed in order for, at the end of the day, it's a money making scheme and drama as well. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, there's plenty of places that you could start with Braveheart. I mean, first thing as well is the one thing that always bothered me, even as a child, is the fact that there is two Scottish people in the entire movie. One has got the main part, so the guy that plays Robert the Bruce is actually Scottish. All of the rest of them are putting on Scottish accents, and I think we've talked about this so many times before, the actual bane of our lives as Scottish people is people that cannot do Scottish accents, and they're so bad. I don't know what the consensus is on Mel Gibson's Scottish accent. I mean, I think it's bad, but he's not one of the worst, though.
That would be me on a drunken night out, to be honest.
So it's just fucking horrendous. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, come here, Skippy, let's go fight Longshanks. You know, it's just like abysmal.
Do you know what gets to me, though? It's the can't do the R's. So he goes, try. But he can't roll his R, so it's like Cly. Like, oh, like the whole bit where he's like in front of the army and he's doing his speech and he's like, we will Cly, Cly. And I'm like, oh, Mel. Like, I don't understand why they couldn't have got a Scottish actor for that part. I think that is the main kind of thing that I hate about it, is that, I mean, I get that it was Mel Gibson that funded it, Mel Gibson that directed it, Mel Gibson that wanted the glory starring in it. But, like, just get someone who doesn't have that accent. It's just, oh, it's depressing.
I think for me, one of the main things about the movie, you're saying about kind of like the Scottish actors and stuff like that, I mean, it's genuinely so true. It's like, obviously, Mel Gibson playing William Wallace, you know, he's Australian. His wee pal Hamish, I mean, to be fair, Brendan Gleeson, I mean, he's Irish. So that's okay, you know what I mean? Like, that's not too bad.
we
will accept that. I will accept that. Hamish's dad, James Cosmo, again, Scottish actor, absolutely fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I forgot about James Cosmo.
Yeah, he's.
How
I mean,
can
he's
you forget about James Cosmo? He's brilliant.
I know.
I just forgot he was in it for a second there.
Yeah.
The wife also does a bad accent.
Oh, that is horrendous.
Yeah.
At one point, I remember, because like there was a really rather poignant point where they're sitting down and Wallace is trying to, you know, like, woo her with his French and Latin skills and that. And then she just turns around and she goes, "Why, I man, you still didn't leave any manners on your travels, did you?" Like that. It's just like a proper Geordie accent. And you're just kind of going, "No fucking way, man. How are you? Come on."
She's English, I think, in real life.
She is, but that still doesn't fucking excuse it, though. It's kind of...
No, I mean that... She's just so bad, like... Ugh. Do you know what, though? This is a little bit of a side tangent, but I feel like... Have any of you seen Birkin Hair?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Isla Fisher's attempt at a Scottish accent in that film. She has Scottish parents. Her mum and dad are both Scottish. Like, see, if I was her parents, I would just be, like, for shame. Like, I would just be like, it would take me a good while to get over that. Like, you'd think she would do better than that.
You'd fucking disown her, wouldn't you? When you hear someone do it and it's shit, it's just unbelievably annoying. It's like, just on a kind of wee side tangent here, I remember I went to Canada for my cousin's wedding many years ago, right? And, you know, the Canadians, I've got to say, they're lovely fucking people. Like, Canadians, so polite, so friendly, right? But when they say, "Oh my God, I love your accent," and then they try and do it, and then you hear it, and you're just kind of like, that sounds more kind of like a hybrid of, like, Japanese and maybe like Swahili than it does like of like anywhere near Scottish.
I remember I watched a program on, I can't remember what channel it was on, but it was about this guy who was like an accent kind of person, and he wanted to go and learn like the places where all the actors go to like learn their accents, like vocal coaches and stuff like that. And he went and spoke to like the top vocal coach person in London and the RADA or whatever it was. And he basically said that it is the hardest accent to do, like, for an actor or for anybody, like, to try and pull off the Scottish accent is the hardest, and they need to get in the big guns. They have to bring in the big guns and the vocal coaches for it, because apparently the way that we move our tongue in our mouth is completely different. So, like, he was saying that the tongue goes to, like, a completely different part in the mouth than, like, someone with an English accent or an American accent. Like, their tongues are all... It sounds weird just saying the tongues, but their tongues are all, like, like, they're quite similar, but they're, like, in different parts of the mouth, whereas ours, obviously, we can roll it more, but it, like, goes to, like, a different... There's an actual, like, biological reason behind why it's difficult and why people struggle with it, apparently.
Kelly, I love how you're taking this really, really seriously, and all I'm thinking is, their tongue goes somewhere different in their mouth.
You know what? I was actually going to say that as well. I can confirm via my wife that Scottish tongues are very good, just like to say that, you know what I mean? Anna, if
sorry
you're
for all the women
this,
that... Sorry for all the mums and babies watching this or listening to this.
Can I just do a wee side note, just like Anna, if you are like listening to this later on, just, you know, I was only joking. Well, I'm not actually, but yeah, cool.
Oh, God.
Okay, now that we all know Cam more.
Hello.
You realise that the next time your wife comes round to my house to do my eyebrows, all I'm going to be doing is lying there and thinking, we've had this conversation. And I'm going to be going bright red. And all I'm going to be thinking is tongues.
Cam's tongue.
Scottish tongue.
Fuck me.
Right. Okay.
Could I say something about
please.
Braveheart? So, it's definitely something that I think that really needs to be brought up is in certain like parts of the battle scenes and stuff like that, the Scottish soldiers decide to paint themselves blue, which traditionally I believe I don't know why they decided to do that in the actual movie, but I'm assuming they decided to make some connection between Scottish soldiers at that particular moment in time and the Picts, who used to paint themselves. Now, interestingly, I've actually kind of found out it might not have actually been wool that the Picts used. It might have actually been copper, and prolonged use might have actually dyed their skin blue. But anyway, though, the historically inaccurate fact of Braveheart with the guys painting themselves blue is it didn't fucking happen. Likewise, kilts, I mean, they didn't come until much, much later. Most likely, to be honest, the Scottish soldiers and the English soldiers would have probably dressed very, very, you know, in a similar fashion. So, you know, there probably wouldn't have been that much difference between them.
When I was researching this, one of the things that kind of came up time and time again was that See, the English in the film, they have like a uniform, like they're all dressed the same, but they actually wouldn't have been. So they would have been dressed differently in their own kind of whatever they could piece together. But you're probably right, it would have been of a sort of similar style, whether it's like a woolen jumper type thing or whatever the technical term is, or something else. So yeah, you're probably right there.
See, this is where I would come in with my film hat on and basically say that wouldn't necessarily work as well on film if you had them looking the same. I think for an audience, you would need to have them, like, I can understand why they've made that change, because you would need to know that they're on opposite sides. And for, like, general moviegoing audiences, it would be easier to say, all right, okay, the people in the uniform are the English, the people with the blue paint on their face are the Scottish. We know who the opposing forces are. So as much as it's historically inaccurate, I can kind of see why they've done that, just in terms of like making it more visual for like a movie going audience, basically.
I get that, but I mean, at the same token of time, though, I mean, there's other points in the movie which you just kind of think to yourself, like, fucking seriously? Like, you know, like one of the ones that I also remember as well, at the very, very start, it's kind of, you know, Angus McFadden, the guy that plays Robert the Bruce, he starts off with the whole kind of spiel, you know, Scotland's fighting for its independence, we're fighting against a vicious pagan king, Edward Longshanks. Like, Longshanks wasn't actually a pagan, you know, he was actually a Christian, a Catholic, like the rest of the Scots and like the rest of the English, you know what I mean? It's just I just, you know what, for me Braveheart is just such a plastic kind of Scottish movie. I really don't like it, and I just think the historical inaccuracies in it just further infuriate me, if I'm being honest.
Well, a couple of like there's some that like obviously you can understand in terms of, like film and why they've changed it, but there was a couple of ones that are just like more hilarious than anything when you like read about it. So the fact that Isabella, so the basically in the film William Wallace has an affair with Isabella of France, who is
I know
Edward
this part.
II's wife. Now she was like what 10 or something at this point in real life. But then also they imply that she was pregnant with his baby, and that Edward III, I'm assuming they're talking about, was William Wallace's son. Like, I mean, that is pure, like, they've just done that for the drama. Like, that is not even attempting to be historically accurate at this point.
But you know what? It's actually probably quite a good thing. Well, not a good thing, but you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, sticking up to the man and stuff like that. Like, you know, you're like, yeah, you know, you've got me. You're about to fucking kill me, but I pumped your missus, so fucking take that, dildo.
Exactly. And
Sorry.
the bit where she's like, when he's dying and she leans over and she essentially tells him that, like,
It's not your son,
aye.
yeah. Or not your grandson, I should say, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like,
And then he dies. But they added that in for the drams. They also added in, so there is actually a couple of things that are kind of historically accurate. They're few, so I'll probably just like quickly mention them before we thingy it more. So Robert the Bruce's dad having leprosy, they think that was actually a true thing. They think Robert the Bruce might have also had leprosy at a later point in his life. So that they've got evidence for that, so that's not entirely made up. So they were probably like, yeah, it's like this wee decrepit like old guy being like manipulative and telling them Robert the Bruce to change sides or whatever. But that is also a drama that they didn't have to wake up, because there is evidence that Robert the Bruce did switch sides a couple of times before the Battle of Bannockburn. So that is also kind of historic. Like, although another thing is obviously him and William Wallace likely never knew each other. And they were fighting in different wars. So Wallace was the first war against Edward the First, and then Robert Bruce was against Edward the Second. So they were different wars. But I can understand, again, you've got the two national heroes of Scotland. We'll make them meet each other. Ooh, and then for the drama, one of them will betray the other one and be the reason that he gets hung, drawn, quartered, blah, blah, blah.
But that never actually happened, did it? Like,
No,
Robert the Bruce had nothing to do with the betrayal of William Wallace
no, no.
and him getting, you know.
No, Wallace had been in hiding for like 7 years, I think. After, I don't know if it was after the Battle of Falkirk or when, but he had been in hiding for a long time, and he was captured. I want to say, I can't really remember how. I can't remember off the top of my head. I know it was near Glasgow, but some. I don't know if he was betrayed or if something happened
Fucking
and he was
Ouija's,
captured.
honestly, man. Sorry, but that's just fucking standard, isn't it? I'll fucking shaft you over for anything. Or like fucking 5 shillings or something. Ken, what I mean? Be like, you know. And
I mean,
he
it's been
ain't
not
that well,
mentioned
your boy.
there.
Fucking take him. And then, like, Wallace is kind of like, you fucking bastards.
Well, at the Battle of Stirling Bridge was one that was another major historical inaccuracy, because in the movie there's no, like, well, the clue is in the title, Stirling Bridge, there was a bridge involved. But in the movie, they changed it to just being like a regular open field battle. But the whole thing about the Battle of Stirling Bridge, and I think this is one thing, like, I think they could have done this well on film. So this is one thing that a change that I do disagree with, is one of the reasons that Scots wanted Stirling Bridge was because the English had to go through, it just reminds me again of that horrible history song, they had to cross a narrow bridge to get to us, you see. Anyway, so they basically had to go over, they had to, there was like marshy ground, and the English, the Scots were on like, had the higher ground or whatever vantage point, and the English had to go over this like narrow bridge to like get over to them, and then it was weak or something like that, and then they were in the mud, and the Scots were able to just kind of pick them off like ducks in a barrel, from like what I've read. So
Yeah,
yeah, I
but that
think
that's not really sexy though, is it? Like
no,
as
but I think, see, I think they could have done that well in film, in terms of like if they put some dramatic music over them, they had like, you know, but then, yeah, maybe that's just me. I
it's
thought
not
I
really
would be
the
quite
tale
interested.
of like the Scottish amazing victory over the English if they're literally just stabbing people that are stuck in the mud.
Well, I think it's quite an opportunistic battle win. Like, I'd quite like to see it, because I think you'd really do that, like, you could do that really dramatically. I mean, they had plenty of other battles that were like your standard, like, charging in the field battle, but that one was unique in the fact that it was like they were very much like, oh, we've got a vantage point here. And I think they could have done something really exciting with that. So that is one thing that, like, yeah, I'm kind of like, if I was Mr. Gibson, which I am decidedly not, then that is one thing that I maybe would have done, or I definitely would have done differently. The other thing as well is he wasn't, so in the movie they make him out to be like a total commoner, like peasant, like living on the land, blah blah blah, but it was actually, they think it was like a lower nobility, so he was like not a super posh like gentleman, but he had land, or like his dad had land, so they think he was like sort of like a lower nobleman, if you can get that, if that exists.
There's a guy wearing a watch at one point.
Is there?
Like,
Wait
yeah,
about
no shit. It's in one of the battle scenes. It's oh god, it's like literally, I think he's like lying down getting killed, and then it's just kind of like, you know, it's like there's a hand, you can see it, and then you can just see kind of like, oh, that's a Rolex, that's quite nice.
Ye olde
You know. Ye
Ye
olde
olde
Rolex, exactly.
And just to finish off, a few more historical inaccuracies from the film. So, weirdly, and I didn't know this, so William Wallace was not actually nicknamed Braveheart. Braveheart was the nickname, apparently, of Robert the Bruce, and it was a name that was given posthumously, when his after he died, when his heart was removed, and taken off in crusade, and then brought back and buried in Scotland. So it's actually Robert the Bruce that's Braveheart, not William Wallace. Go figure.
Stealing his vibe.
I know, right? Rude. So the film opens in 1276, but King Alexander III was still king.
Do you know how King Alexander the Third died?
Was he not the one that fell off the horse in Glenrothes?
That's correct. So I believe King Alexander the Third was the very first kind of instance in Scottish history of don't drink and drive, or in this case, don't drink and ride. So I believe he was going around Scotland basically sticking his wick in anything that kind of moved. And after a night in the bevy, him and his lads were on the horses, and then because he was pissed, he fell off and died. And then yeah.
Lads, lads, lads. Shame it
Lads,
ended
lads,
in
lads.
death, death, death.
So, King Edward I did not die at the same time as William Wallace, but several years later. They don't get his death right. They actually, amazingly, underplay it. William Wallace was hung, drawn, disemboweled, castrated, and then quartered. So they really did underplay the kind of gruesome nature of his death.
I think that was probably for the ratings purpose, which is ironically, if you've ever seen Gunpowder, they go full haul with a hang drawn and quartered in, and it is disgusting. It's so hard to watch. But I, funnily enough, a wee fact about that, the execution scene in Braveheart, is they did film a version, where you saw it. So I don't know if you remember in the movie, it focuses on his face when he's getting disemboweled, so you don't actually see what they're doing. But they did film a version when they pulled, you could actually see them doing all the nastiness. And I'm pretty sure it was like the censors in America were essentially like, if you put that into the movie, you'll have to give it a higher rating and you won't make as much money. So that's why they took it out. Fun fact.
Ah, that does make sense.
That's interesting.
So,
Interesting.
Wallace's father died after his rebellions began. They didn't sack York, they sacked Carlisle, and there wasn't an Uncle Argyle, as far as we're aware, historically speaking, anyway.
So, our next movie, another Mel Gibson wank piece, is The Patriot. So basically, The Patriot is about a guy. He's got his missus has died, very sad, which is he's got a whole bunch of kids and stuff like that. He's just a humble man, you know. He likes to work with wood and stuff like that. He's got some slaves, but you know, not really slaves, you know, because they're treated quite well. I mean,
He's
that's just
nice to
fucking
them.
bullshit. Yeah, you know what? It's like, you know, I will whip you, but when I whip you, I'll have a smile on my face. Not because I'm sadistic, but because I'm a nice guy, which is complete bullshit. But anyway, so he's, you know, he's a nice guy, he's got a family, you know, everything's like rosy. And then, you know, oh, you know, no taxation without representation, you know, and you know, yeah, we don't belong to Britain, you know, fuck King George and all this kind of shit. And he's like, no, come on, guys, you know, let's try and be friends. Let's be fucking diplomatic about it. And then, oh, lo and behold, there's a battle. And then, because he's a nice guy, he treats everybody, British and American alike. And then the British come along, and because they're a bunch of bastards, they go, right, kill the Yanks, but let's get our boys back home. And he's going, no, don't fucking do this, please, come on. And then his son dies, and then he's like, I'm gonna get fucking angry. So then he takes his two young kids out, and they ambush like a British patrol. Now, I'm just gonna say this right now. Like, you know, child soldiers, like, it's not acceptable at any time, whether it's the American Revolutionary War or like fucking Darfur. So, you know, Mel Gibson, fucking well done for that one, prick. So anyway, moving on. So he ambushes these soldiers and he becomes like, you know, I'm gonna become a patriot, I'm gonna fucking fight. And then, you know, he gets help from a French guy, I can't remember his name, but he's been in quite a lot of movies. So he's like, yeah, bonjour, yeah, wee, let's go fucking help. So then they go to this pub and they're like, come on, guys, everyone sign up. And everyone's kind of signing up, being like, yeah, I'll sign my fucking name. We'll fight the English and all the British and all this kind of shape. And one of the interesting parts about this kind of scene when we're in this tavern and they're having a good drink and stuff like that and they're getting people to sign up is this guy comes along and says, you know, I'll let my slave fight for you. And then the slaves is kind of like, you know, oh, you know, I've obviously got to fight. And he was kind of like, sign your name. He's like, oh, I can't sign my name. Make your mark. Just to kind of say, this is one of my all-time pet hates of that movie, is they actually say, like, you know, five shillings for like every month of service, and freedom was meant to be given to slaves who fought for the Continental Army, so like the Americans. That never fucking happened, FYI, just to let you know. So that is just completely bullshit. So anyway, so Mel Gibson gets all his kind of his band of merry men. His son goes off to fight as well. Forgot about that part. That's Heath Ledger, and he goes off and he meets a lass, and he's like, yeah, woo. And then, so Mel Gibson's fighting, he's a fucking militiaman, and then his son's fighting in the actual army. And then, fuck, I'm just trying to remember what actually happened now. Oh, yeah, sorry. So Mel Gibson's fighting, there's this evil English colonel, cavalry colonel, who goes around fucking
Can
killing
I just
people.
say, he is played by the magnificent Jason Isaacs, who just bosses this movie. That's just wanted to come in and say that.
Yeah, no. Kelly, thank you very much for that. Jason Isaacs is a fucking fantastic actor. In fact, there's another historical and accurate movie I'm going to speak about later on that he's in it. But anyway, continuing on. So, The Patriot, so he's this bad English fucking colonel. He's like a Nazi, you know, he's burning down people's homes. He's fucking stabbing people. He's being a dick and stuff like that. So, anyway, moving on. Mel Gibson's like, I'm going to fucking fight. Oh, his son dies, by the way. One of them fucking dies. I can't remember which one, but he dies at the fucking start, whatever. And then.
Jason Isaacs kills him.
Oh, that's right, Jason Isaacs kills him, Jason Isaacs spears him or fucking shoots him or whatever he does. Anyway, so moving along, Mel Gibson's got a bee in his bonnet about this whole thing, so they're fighting. There's all this kind of love, he ends up pumping his wife's sister, which I'm no being funny, but if that was me, it's no something I would do. But anyway, again, Mel Gibson, eat your heart out, whatever. So his son then ends up, what is it, getting engaged to this lassie, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, he's going to try and get her pumped, but then she dies in a church because, you know, the bad Brits set fire to it, which again never actually happened, but never mind Mel Gibson. So moving on, they've then got the last kind of battle, the French are there to help and stuff like that, which again, I don't actually think, well, actually, to be fair, actually, I think the French did most of the fighting in the American Revolutionary War, but never mind. So anyway, the last battle's there, they've all got their fucking flags, like, yeah, yeehaw, I'm on board, you know, woo, you know, like that, because, like, you know, that's Americans, that's what they do, you know. So they're all charging up this hill, they've all got their flags, their stars and stripes, and they beat the British, and they're all like, yeah, fuck you, Cornwallis, yeah, motherfucker, and then, like, that's them, and then the Constitution's written, and then, yeah, that's pretty much the Patriot.
So, a slight aside there, the French involvement actually nearly bankrupted France. The amount of money that was poured in was a contributing factor towards the French Revolution.
It's interesting that you say that because a similar thing actually happened in the Netherlands. So I believe the Dutch sent over a large amount of cannons to the Americans, and I believe they were actually expecting payment for them. But because the Americans didn't pay them, they also bankrupted themselves as well. Right, I'll just start with a couple of kind of like historical inaccuracies regarding the whole Patriot. So there were some accuracies actually in the movie itself, to be fair. So the French, they did help the Continental Army. That is true, maybe not necessarily at certain points, but that did happen. There were battles that were shown in the movie, such as the Battle of Cowpens, I can't quite remember. And apparently the guns in the movie were accurately chosen for the time period, so i.e. muskets, etc. So, as I was just kind of saying before, one of the main inaccuracies actually about the movie is the whole issue with slavery. I think it's actually terrible, the fact that in the movie they kind of like seem to just kind of like whitewash the entire happening of this during the American Revolutionary War. And the fact that, you know, oh, don't worry about it, we'll give you 5 shillings and you'll get your freedom. I mean, that never actually happened. I mean, I do remember there were instances of slaves who actually fought on the side of the Continental Army. And as soon as the war was up, it was like, right, back to the plantations for you. So, you know, I just think that whole entire idea of, like, you know, yeah, we fought for freedom. Yeah, you know, you're fucking enslaving, you know, thousands, maybe even millions of people. I just kind of thought that's a bit rich. Another major inaccuracy regarding the movie. So the French were only shown helping the Continental Army at Yorktown, when in actual fact the French had helped well before that. So that's something as well. And as I briefly touched upon in the movie, the British, Jason Isaacs, my man, peace out to your brother. He's shown burned down a church with people inside it. Again, that's just, there's never been like any recording actually of that act during the war. So
I've got a wee interest. So there's a review that The Guardian wrote about The Patriot that mentions this bit about the church burning, which I think you'll really like. So if yous are okay with it, can I read a little section of it?
Please do.
Por favor.
Just with you mentioning it. So, in this scene, it's called, so, just for context, when they say Tavington, that means Jason Isaacs' character. So, in one scene, Tavington herds non-combatant men, women and children into a church, locks the door and sets it on fire. At the time of the film's release, some historians noted the similarity between this and the notorious Nazi massacre of French villagers in Oradour-sur-Glane in 1944. It is, however, nothing like anything that happened during the American Revolution. This will be forgotten, scoffs Tavington. It is a disgraceful attempt to sow the seed of a completely unfounded conspiracy theory, implying that the fact that nobody has ever heard of the British Army burning a church full of innocents in South Carolina doesn't mean it didn't happen. Well, it didn't. As the American historian Richard F. Snow commented, of course it never happened. If it had, do you think that the Americans would have forgotten it? It would have kept us out of World War I.
That's a very good point, actually.
That's really interesting, Kelly. Am I right in saying, is that like that church? Because I do remember reading about this. There's a village in France where it's not like occupied because all the residents were either killed by the Germans, and it's still unoccupied today, and it's like a living war memorial. Is that correct? Is that the same one?
I think so, yeah.
I'll have to do some more research into it. That might be something that we can maybe do for another kind of podcast and stuff like that. So yeah. Kind of moving on back to the historical inaccuracies, one of the other ones as well is in one of the scenes, what do you call his name? Mel Gibson's handing a store clerk some money, and you can see that he's given the guy at the shop a $5 bill, which has Abraham Lincoln's picture on it. So let's have a wee look. I mean, I think one of the funny things you just kind of mentioned was the fact that the Brits were portrayed as kind of like the Nazis and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. But anyway, we can leave that to a side point and
I think
just,
another,
sorry.
sorry, another thing as well is that they're pretty much exclusively shown as being English in it, where it was a mixture of Irish, Welsh, and Scottish as well in the British Army. Just thought I'd say that.
Oh yeah, definitely. It wasn't just as if it was kind of like the yeah English. I mean, but it's not just that though as well. There was also like mercenaries from kind of like Hanover as well, that were employed by the British,
Oh, yeah, the Hessians.
Hessians. Exactly. Yes, that's right. I mean, and you look at the Americans as well. I mean, they wouldn't have just been like solely kind of like white Americans. You had the French, you had the Spanish, you had the Dutch as well that were helping them. So it wasn't just kind of like yeehaw, it's us boys. It was actually kind of like oh wee wee and oh see see and then I don't know what yeah is and or yes is in Dutch. I'm assuming whatever it is. But anyway, there were other ones as well. Another kind of point to make, going back to the whole slavery thing, Benjamin Martin is also is based on a character, based on a guy called Francis Marion, who apparently in real life loved to kill Native Americans and was also prolifically known for raping his slaves. So yeah, freedom, woo, yeah.
Is anyone interested in hearing what a certain someone called Mr. Harrison Ford thought about the film?
Yes,
Yes,
very much so.
please.
So I just found this and I just thought this was like great because like I love Harrison Ford anyway, but so he was offered the lead part that Mel Gibson had, but he refused it. Basically he didn't want it, and the reason that he did this was because he said that he felt that it had reduced the Revolutionary War to a one man's revenge melodrama. Like, gun yourself, Patterson.
Oh, I like
So
it.
true, so true. You know what? I think when you look at the Patriot, I think when they're all talking about freedom and stuff like that, it's very difficult to talk about freedom, and I think it's very convenient if you leave the slaves out because ultimately they deprive the slaves of their freedom. You know what I mean? It's quite rich to be sitting there talking about kind of like the ideal that you're one man, one vote, the constitutional rights of, able to hold our bear arms, excuse me, and all the rest of it, and land, freedom, property, all this kind of jazz. Yet, you've shipped millions of people from another continent to toil away in fields. I mean, that's not just America, that's Britain as well. You know what I mean? So I think Britain as a whole has got to hold its hands up to that. I'm
Oh,
not saying
definitely,
it
yes.
wouldn't, but I do kind of think that in the Patriot they do very conveniently brush over and minimise the entire issue of slavery. And a very interesting fact I've been reading about as well with regards to this kind of time period, certain states they don't know for definite because record keeping at the time wasn't exactly the best, but they do estimate that anywhere between 20, possibly even going up to 40% of the population of certain states in America were inhabited by slaves. So I mean, we're not just talking maybe about a few hundred people, we're talking about thousands, millions of people that would have been enslaved. So, and for them to brush over it, I think is quite poor.
Who, according to the Constitution, only constitute three quarters of the whole when talking about the census.
That's funny. It's
Just as an aside there.
Another thing as well is there wouldn't have been, in terms of like British and American, because they wouldn't have called them British, they would have called them regulars. That's just another
Oh
fun
yes,
fact.
exactly, yes.
The Britisher coming was never a thing, it would have been the regulars are coming.
Another kind of side note as well. Do you think, like, at this particular moment in time, they would have spoke largely with, like, the same accents? Like, Scottish people in, like, I don't know, let's say, for example, Edinburgh, but then you get a Scotsman, let's say, for example, in South Carolina. You wouldn't exactly expect the Scotsman in Edinburgh to be like, "All right, pal," and then the Scotsman in South Carolina to be like, "Yeah!" Would you? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know actually. That's a weird one. They say that the modern American accent is actually close to the original English accent, apparently. I don't know how true that is, though.
No, Becky.
Don't even. Do not, Cameron. I know exactly what you're going to say.
Becky.
Do not. I'm not going to start talking like this. No,
It's the
thank
way
you.
that you should talk. It's your origins.
Yes, but origins can be wrong. Plus, also, it just would give me a headache, and I just don't like it. So, fair enough. If that's how we used to speak, then I will take a deep breath. I will pull up my big girl pants, and I will move on, like with Boadicea. But no, thank you. I'd rather speak how I speak now. Thanks.
Boadicea.
Whereas we've always been like, yes. Or
Wait,
did you not hear this,
no.
Cam?
No. Let's go back. Boadicea. Do you not say
Yeah, right.
Boudica?
Biddica.
So,
Okay. Well, sorry. No. One second, Becky. Sorry. Okay, Kelly. What do you say?
Biddica.
Boudica.
Yes, and I now say Boudica, but I grew up in, or partly in Suffolk, so just like a hop, skip, and a jump away from Sutton Hoo, and obviously the Iceni and Boudica was the queen there. But when I was growing up, and the local teachers always used to call her Boadicea, so for the last 30 odd years, I've been calling her Boadicea. But it would appear now that historians have finally decided that it was in fact Boudica. And so, as much as I will deal with it, and again pull up my big girl pants and move on, it still grates whenever I say Boudica, not Boadicea.
She's Boadicea in your heart.
She is. She will always be Boadicea in my heart.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Becky. So now that we've established that The Patriot is a shit movie and Mel Gibson is not only a terrible actor but a fucking terrible director, we shall move on to our next movie, which
Oh,
is
sorry. Can I
Lad.
just add one thing?
Do
Sorry.
do 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 do. Sorry.
So I just when I was looking up when I was reading about The Patriot, the New York Times review on the film. And this is the best quote ever. The Patriot was to history as Godzilla was to biology. I just think that's fantastic.
Yes, that's brilliant. So now that we have established that The Patriot is not only a shit movie and Mel Gibson is a shit actor and shit director, we're now gonna quickly fire over to some other kind of like movies which have some historical inaccuracies in it. So moving on, we will be moving on to the film 300, starring Gerard Butler. Kel Y, as you shall now be known, take it away, please.
Yes, I shall. So basically, 300 is the story of the great battle between the Persians and the Spartans at Thermopylae. Now, forgive me because it has been a while since I've seen this movie, so if I've not got the plot right, I will not be a patch on Cam, so I'll just kind of leave it there. Basically, the gist is that Gerard Butler plays King Leonidas, and he is the leader of the Spartans, and yeah, basically it's all leading up to like this big battle between them and the Persians and who's going to win, blah 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 blah. Basically, I think the main thing that everyone remembers about this movie that is the most historically inaccurate thing about it, but one thing that I argue, like, in this occasion, I'm not really that bothered, is that they all wear skimpy pants. Whereas the Spartans would have worn normal armour, pretty similar to like Athenian and other Greek states' armour, like, the full torso protection, the sandals, the like, all of that kind of thing. They
I'm
would have
with you
looked
on this
very
point,
much.
Kelly. Pants
But
all the way.
I mean, if they want to like parade about with like their finely chiselled like abs and like nothing but a skimpy like whatchamacallit, then that's I mean, you know what? I mean, I'm not going to complain about that. I know it's completely historically inaccurate, but I mean, I'm just trash.
Praise be to the gods of Hollywood.
I forgot Michael Fassbender was in it as well.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, that is my main thing is just I know it's so historic, like they would not have dressed like that, but like they did it for us and I kind of appreciate that.
So, Baxter, any points?
Yes, and I'm just going to reel them off if that's okay. Ephialtes wasn't hunchbacked, he was just a greedy bellend, and that's the main one I want to kind of get in there. Yes, he betrayed them, but what the fuck's with the bellend? I mean, I know it's there's creative license because it's based on the graphic novel by Frank Miller, but lads, you know, come on. Xerxes, in terms of Xerxes, right? The contemporary art, Persian art, he's bearded, he's distinguished, he's fully clothed. But in the film, he's like 7 foot tall and he's not got any hair. And then he's really not got much on at all. Again, Kelly going back to the praise be of the gods of Hollywood. And all he's really got in terms of clothing is gold chains, really, really impractical piercings. Now, as a piercing enthusiast, I appreciate the aesthetics, but in reality, no. And the kind of final thing that I really want to say, don't get me wrong, the character of the Arc of the Queen, played by the goddess that is Lena Headey, really pisses me off. However, I like her relationship with Leonidas because she's treated by him with respect, and it's more equal than one might have the right to expect, considering that it's Hollywood and women are considered as trash by many of the men within the inner circle. And that's
One
all
of
I
the
have.
favourite bits from that movie I remember is her nod, where she's like,
Yes.
yeah, she gives him permission to like yeet that guy. Oh, the power.
Oh, honestly, she's an absolute empress. She really is.
There's a lot that we could kind of say about the movie 300. I think most of it, to be fair, I mean, actually, pretty much all of it, to be fair, has actually been already kind of covered by Becky and Kelly. But I just want to kind of say one thing as well. One of the things that kind of annoys me about the movie is the whole kind of like, you know, here we are, we noble Spartans fighting for freedom again, against these evil Eastern Persians that are coming here to fucking, you know, take a massive shit on us. One of the interesting things is actually, again, Spartans were quite heavily involved in slavery, and their slaves referred to as helots. Now, at any one time, helots could make up 60% of the population of the Sparta. Including that, though, I believe one of the, if I remember correctly, one of the kind of initiation actions a young Spartan had to take was to actually go out in the field and kill a helot. So, yeah. Freedom again. One of the things that I've been reading about is with the whole idea about Xerxes and the Achaemenid Empire is they weren't necessarily this horrible Eastern horde full of barbarians that were coming to shit on the noble Greeks. They were actually quite I mean, they had quite a lot of reverence for Greek culture and the Greek people. And one of the things that they did was the Achaemenid Empire actually went to war with the ancient Babylonian Empire. And when they beat them, they actually began to free all the enslaved Jews, allow them to have property. And in fact, if I remember correctly, the Achaemenid Empire was one of the very first states to actually have a codified, almost constitution of citizen rights. So they weren't actually this evil kind of like barbarian horde from the east. Any other points, ladies?
No, I'm good.
Nope.
Good stuff. So, moving on, we shall now go on to Pocahontas.
So how do you summarize a problem like Pocahontas? Starts in London, there's lots of singing. American Mel Gibson, not English, goes onto the boat. They then sail across the sea. Then they get to America, and then they find the place of land where they want to create Jamestown. They go onto the shore. In the meantime, but separate to this, in an Algonquin village, the Algonquin tribe has come back from war, and there's an absolute fitty that's apparently the hero of the whole the battles and they've won and hooray, hurrah. Pocahontas is standing on top of a cliff and then dives off said cliff and hits the water with nary even a broken bone, considering the velocity that she threw herself off that cliff, FYI, followed swiftly by some form of raccoon. And then she goes back to the village and she sees her father and she's all excited. And then her father, without even so much as a so, how's it been, how's things, tells her that she has to get married to the absolute fitty that was the hero of the war. And then she's like, what? And then she throws her toys out of her pram and sings a big song about throwing her toys out of her pram, then goes to find a talking tree. And the talking tree agrees with her that the fitty that won the war is a bit serious. And then she sees this magic sailing boat thing with lots of big sails and goes to investigate and finds out that it is, in fact, the English with Billy Connolly randomly stuck in there and English accented Christian Bale. And then she looks at them and kind of tries to figure out what's happening. And then John Smith decides to go for a walk in a random place where he doesn't know whether or not he's going to be attacked by the native peoples, who, by the way, were sort of possibly instrumental in killing some of the people at Roanoke, as we discussed in a previous podcast. Anyway, then he meets the raccoon. The raccoon then takes him to Pocahontas, and then John Smith and Pocahontas magically fall in love. And it's all kind of leaves and magic trees singing. And then they fall in love throughout the course of the kind of 5 minutes that they know each other. And then they go back to their respective places. And then there's a few other kind of skirmishes and what kind of, you know, sort of thing. And then Hunk from the that managed to win the battle is killed by Christian Bale. And then there's this big whole kind of all gearing up for a big battle. And then the Native Americans capture John Smith, and he is almost killed by Chief Powhatan, but Pocahontas then stops the execution, and then they're all friends, except that John Smith is then injured by a gunshot and taken back to England. The end.
Thank you, Becky. Just one wee point I want to pick up on. So you said that, well, 2 points actually. So first of all, John Smith, he was voiced by Mel Gibson?
Yes, he was, yes.
Says it all.
Yes,
absolutely, yes. There's a bit of a theme in this podcast.
Yes, there is. We should just rename this episode, We Hate Mel Gibson.
We should, that's what I was going to say.
And that's, we've not even touched on his Jesus film.
Oh,
that's a whole other thing entirely.
Oh, the passion. Oh, God. Right. Kelly, any thoughts on the old Pocahontas?
Yeah, well, first of all, right, I think with this, I've not got a problem with the movie itself. It's like a childhood classic, like I love the songs, blah, blah, blah. The main issue is, I guess, the fact that they took something that maybe shouldn't have been made into like a kid, like sanitised for like a kids movie, because the history behind it is quite dark, and obviously it speaks to like colonialism and all the horrible things that happened back then. But because it's conflicting, because I do really like it and I don't want to, like, you know, just pretend that I don't, because I loved it as a kid and I like Colours of the Wind and all of that. But I think there is a more nastier historical history that doesn't maybe get talked about as much with it. An interesting thing though about it in terms of like historical accuracies is that Pocahontas wasn't actually our real name, it was our nickname, funnily enough.
I love this, yes.
And our real name was Amanute. Amanut. And then she also had a name called Matuaka, which was like the mention was spoken in private, so it's like she had like her public name, her private name, and then her nickname. So she had three names, which is pretty cool. But she was called Pocahontas because it means the playful one, because I think that at the time she was quite playful and she was her dad's favourite child, you know, she would go like run through the woods and blah blah blah, which is quite similar to how they depicted in the movie. However, with the main difference being that they've aged her up, so in real life when she met John Smith, Pocahontas was about 10 or 11 and he was 27. But, I mean, that, when we think about that, that's so creepy, because in the movie they've like pure got a romance and everything, and like they've aged her up so that she can like get on with the white man, blah blah blah. But in real life they didn't actually, there's no evidence that her and John Smith ever had like a romantic relationship. She eventually married John Rolfe, who's another Englishman, but they never, there is no evidence for it. So I think I hear a lot of the times when people talk about it, they say, oh, you know, the real life story behind Pocahontas and John Smith is like paedophilia, because like he was 27 and she was like 11, and like he raped her and this, that and the next thing. Whereas there is actually no evidence that they ever had that kind of relationship, and there's a lot to say that he kind of thought of her more as like a kind of younger sister or like a daughter. So I think that's a kind of, I think a lot of people who say that have maybe not read into the background fully. I mean, John Rolfe, maybe a whole other story. I don't know how old she was when she married John Rolfe. I can't really remember, but...
Well, they had their first son when she was 19. And if I'm correct in saying she married him when she was about 16.
All right. So, I mean, in Scotland, age of consent 16. So by a Scottish outlook, then it's not. I mean, obviously, it's back in the day, so it is everything. I mean, it's creepy anyway, but yeah, I think just in terms of a wee bit of like justice for people that say that the real life relationship between her and John Smith was paedophilia, because it wasn't. Whether you want to say between her and John Rolfe is not a totally other thing entirely. But yeah, she never. So in the film, basically, she meets like John Smith and his company land in America, and then she meets him like pretty much quite soon after that. But in reality, the Pocahontas and her tribe never actually met any British people for a few months. So they were in America for a few months before they actually encountered any of the settlers, if you want to call them that. And she only met John Smith when he was captured by her brother. Which obviously in the movie she's depicted as having been like an only child, but she actually did have numerous siblings, even though she was her brother's.
See, I had it as Pocahontas' uncle.
Oh, I had it as her brother. Mm-hmm. Historical sources are conflicting.
Wow, yes.
It was a relative anyway, we can say that. I don't know if you've got any fun facts you want to share.
Oh, do I? So, I watched the film last night, Paul Jack. Just to kind of remind myself of what happens. And there's a few things, and I feel like it's really, really petty things, because obviously you've gone through the main thing there, Kelly, which is that, you know, there wasn't actually a romantic relationship between them because she was a child and he was an adult, and that's just creepy. So that kind of, I think, puts the whole film into some form of perspective. But anyway, so when they sail into, when they get to America, the flag that is flown on the top of the ship, and this is how petty I mean, right?
I know exactly what you're going to say, and that annoys me as well.
It was correct, right? So the one that's on top was the one that James VI of Scotland, First of England, wanted to trial, and that's the kind of saltire with the St. George's Cross on top. That's fine. However, when Governor Ratcliffe gets off the boat and says, I claim this in the name of King James, da 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 da, right? That's wrong. That flag is wrong. That flag is the more modern flag, which has the lopsided fimbriations on it and is not accurate in this film. There is no reason for it to be there. It is ridiculous, right? Sorry, that's a proper... When people don't use the right flag, it annoys me. It's a strange hill to die on, but it's mine and I'm claiming it. Now, interesting, and I found this out again when I was doing research for this, Pocahontas, in actual fact, marries Cocoam. So, the real Pocahontas, when she was about 14, marries a warrior called Cocoam from her tribe. In the film, obviously, Cocoam is the fitty from the battle that was killed by English-accented Christian Bale. Pocahontas marries Cocoam in 1610, which is the year after John Smith left Virginia. And there's a suggestion by the Jamestown website that she married him for love because he wasn't a high-ranking member of the tribe. My argument there being, if she was 14, she doesn't fucking know what love is. I mean, she's a child. So it's absolute bollocks. Anyway, a couple of years after that, she was kidnapped and held hostage in 1613, which was after a deterioration in relations between the Native Americans and the British. And that's when she met John Rolfe and converted to Christianity, naming herself Rebecca, which means, and obviously I think that's a fantastic name, but it means mother of two tribes, which I think is quite nice.
It's sad that she had to change her name though in the first place.
Oh, I know, I
But
know.
yeah, that's a whole other. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So the scene at the end where Pocahontas saves John Smith from getting his head bashed in apparently actually did happen according to John Smith himself. And however, it's been suggested by people who are far more intelligent than myself and in the know that this was actually part of a kind of like a ceremony almost. Like it was a kind of fake thing that Powhatan would pretend, you know, go to kind of smash his head in, and then Pocahontas would come along and go, no, don't, he's a friend of the tribe or whatever. But the point being is that after this incident supposedly happened, John Smith was accepted into the Powhatan tribe after this incident. The chief of the tribe called him like, was it brother or son or something? So, you know, it actually did, there is some basis there of truth. The other thing that I kind of want, there are two more points that I'd like to make, please. And the first is, in the film, obviously John Smith is shot by Governor Ratcliffe, and who was voiced, by the way, by the inestimable David Ogden Stiers, who was just a phenomenal actor. Love him, you know, RIP. But in reality, John Smith left America due to a gunpowder explosion which seriously injured him. And Pocahontas and her tribe were told that he died on his way back to Blighty in 1609. But a few years later, after she'd married John Ralph, she went to England and she bumped into him in 1616, thinking that he had died. And apparently, she saw him and she became nonsensical and couldn't speak, which I think is so sad. But while they were talking, when she finally found her voice again, she called him father, which for me is what makes the Disney thing even more ridiculous and creepy, because she herself thought of him as a father, not as a have at it, let's me and you go around the back of the bike sheds type thing. And then shortly after she met him again in England the next year, she snuffed it, sadly. But the last point that I want to make, just as an aside, because I think it's really interesting. At the end of the film, Governor Ratcliffe is taken back to Blighty to be tried, although I'm not entirely sure what for, but that's by the by. But Governor Ratcliffe actually had an absolutely horrendous death at the hands of the Native American Powhatan tribe. He was stuck on a spit by a fire, and his skin was flayed off with mussel shells. And as they peeled off his skin, they threw it into the fire, and he had to watch it as his skin was burning. And that is just absolutely horrendous.
What the fuck?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much that's me in terms of Pocahontas. But yeah. Hope do you feel the need the do you feel like you want to watch it now?
I'm thinking I'm good, but thank you very much for that. That was it was quite interesting. Just going back to the whole kind of like John Smith Pocahontas thing, when she calls him father, brings a whole new meaning to the whole phrase, you know, who's your daddy?
I thought you would say that,
So, do either of you ladies have anything else you want to kind of bring into Pocahontas or?
No, just to say that that death thing has proper traumatized me. That's horrible. That's one I've not heard of. I think that's why I know plenty about historical execution methods, blah blah blah, but that is the first time I've heard of that.
Sorry, my bad.
I mean, I think it's quite inventive as like an execution method, but I can see why. I mean, it is obviously incredibly fucking brutal. So, moving on, I think now that we've kind of established in this podcast, one of the kind of main things is Mel Gibson is not only a terrible actor, terrible director, but he's also a terrible human being when it comes to or attempting to accurately portray any historical facts. Does anybody have any other kind of comments they want to kind of make in terms of kind of like movies, TV series, anything else?
Just really quickly, because I fucking hate this film. The new Mary Queen of Scots movie, right? I'm going to keep this brief because I know we're pushed for time, but oh my Jesus fucking Christ. Right, okay, right, where do I even start? So, I hate everything about this film. I'm just, like, putting it out there. Like, it's not... So, one of the main things is, I don't know how much you know about, or if any of you have seen it, but in the movie, they follow the storyline of Mary Queen of Scots' life in terms of the fact that, you know, she was born in France and she came over, but the movie starts from when she arrives in Scotland, having, like, being raised in France. She then, when she gets to Scotland, she marries Lord Darnley, they have a baby, she then, like, splits up with Lord Darnley, marries Earl of Broth, but, you know, our whole story basically, like, goes along historically accurate lines. But then they decide to add in this aspect. Right now, I don't know if they've tried to be woke in this, but what they've done is they've literally just, it's not woke, it's just fucking offensive. And I'm so what they've done basically is Lord Darnley, so they've insinuated, so if you remember, Lord Darnley was widely believed to have been responsible for the murder of Mary's secretary, David Rizzio, by stabbing him 36 times in Holyrood Palace, or his crew did, blah, blah, blah. But in the movie, they decide to add in this new aspect that Lord Darnley and Rizzio were, like, well, they don't say much about Rizzio, but Lord Darnley, they basically say, oh, he's gay, he's had an affair with Rizzio, they've slept together, and then Darnley's basically a hapless moron who's, like, manipulated by his fellow people into, like, going along with Rizzio getting murdered, right? There is absolutely no evidence that I've seen. I mean, feel free to correct me if anyone knows anything about Darnley's sexuality. There's plenty of discourses on his son James's sexuality. But as far as I was aware, there is no actual evidence that Lord Darnley was gay. And even if he was, there is no evidence that he slept with David Rizzio. So they've added that in just to show the fact that when Rizzio gets murdered and gets stabbed in such a brutal, horrible way, they've just added in him being gay from, like... Now, they've just added an extra layer of, like, you're not only watching a man getting, like, murdered, you're watching a gay man getting murdered. Like, with all of the horrible things that happen to gay people at the best of times, and then you've literally just added in this, like, what? I just don't understand what they were even thinking by doing that. It's horrible enough watching him getting murdered without adding in another layer of horribleness to it. Like, I could not believe it when I was watching it. I was like, why have you done this? This is so bad. And it's horrible. They do not shy away from, like, showing I'm being brutally murdered. But they've literally... Oh, sorry, I get really passionate about it because it's so horrible. Like, I just don't understand why they added it in. And then, obviously, then they go forward, like, with the whole thing about Darnley then getting murdered and the Earl of Bothwell being responsible, blah, 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 blah. And again, the Earl of Bothwell is played by Martin Compson, who I love, actually. Like, shout out to Martin Compson. He's from the same hometown as my granny's and Line of Duty's, like, fab. Love him. But then they have, like, there is evidence that that the Earl of Bothwell was abusive and he was this, that, and the next thing. But they show that as well, which is, like, fair enough, you know, like, they show him. But then they also show that he's only married her to, like, advance his own, like, ends, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a whole bit as well where it's like Mary Queen of Scots and Queen Elizabeth, the way they portray Queen Elizabeth I, like, yeah, Margot Robbie's a great actress, but they literally portray her as, like, this angel that cannot do any wrong, and Mary Queen of Scots is, like, this pure nymphomaniac devil, like, she-devil who is so manipulative. And there's literally genuinely one scene where they juxtapose Elizabeth bathed in golden light brushing a horse, looking as pure as anything, and then they cut to Mary Queen of Scots, who's, like, pish, lying half naked in, like, a puppy pile, and are with, like, pure... the equivalent of, like, a 1500s orgy, and they, like, juxtapose between the two, and it's like, oh, like, I thought we were past, like, putting women again, like, just depicting women as, like, virgins, whores, like, angels, devils, like, and it was the worst thing is a woman directed it as well, and I just was like, what were you even thinking with this fucking abortion of a film? Sorry, rant over.
Okie dokie. Yeah, no, definitely. I agreed as well, Kelly. Very passionate, very good though.
I don't have strong feelings about it at all, as you can tell.
I totally get where you're coming from. Well, unless anything's got anything to add, shall we wrap it up? Thank you very much for joining us for another episode of Historical Inaccuracies. I hope you have enjoyed it as much as we have. So it's goodbye from Kelly.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from the Baxter.
Bye.
Goodbye from Maria. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from me, Cameron. Goodbye.